Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the fastest talking two-hour New Zealander radio show in the world. In the Schwarzenegger sense of the world. And my very special guest today is Thomas Sheridan, the man from the land where a heck of a lot of the genetic material in the Western world comes from, because the Irish accent, according to FHM magazine in Australia, is by far the most attractive accent to women, as well as if they happen to be an underwear model like Thomas is. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that. The most attractive accent.
I mean, yeah. It really does turn the girls on. I mean, it's a survey. You can't argue with results. And far as I know, talking with many New Zealanders, all of the ones that are at least of Caucasian descent seem to have at least a little bit of Irish in them. So somebody must have been a smooth talking Irishman at some point and gotten in there.
Well, if a scientific journal of the level of FHM has decreed that, I'll gladly rise to that challenge.
But it's usually better if you're actually in another country where they have a different accent to the Irish accent. Otherwise, yeah. You sound like everybody else, and you're not quite as sexier. That's the unfortunate
business. No, it's true. Okay. It's true. It only works when you're away.
Yeah, exactly. So, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, you can go to Thomas Sheridan's website, thomassheridanarts.com, and is there a donate button there of some kind, Thomas? Because I think we should get you, I don't know, how much would it cost you to go to the States, have a really nice penthouse hotel room, as well as fly there and back, just so that you could have a very, very nice week away, you know, with other girls who don't have the same accent.
We'd have to look on as a humanitarian mission.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. We'd have to look at it as a humanitarian mission. So there's no donate button, but we could arrange something else. Maybe we could do it on do it in the kind of a charity format or something. You know, like what's that website where you donate money to get a
Kickstarter.
Kickstarter. Yeah,
we could do it for sex, and yeah, we could call it Cockstarter.
Except change the word kick to something else.
We could make it into Cockstarter. You know,
Dickstarter.
Yeah. See, there we go, ladies. Donate today. At Cockstarter.com.
I can tell you're not on American Freedom anymore.
No, I'm not. It's ironic, you know, being cast off a network. I wasn't cast off. I actually stopped because they wouldn't have any live broadcasts anymore. The network owner was in jail. Apparently set up on a drug charge or something of this nature. The details are sketchy, but I have noticed a whole bunch of real nasty pieces of work, especially on competing networks. Like they all tried to steal me, and just like turn them down flat, you know. Because honestly,
the FCC thing was a pain in the hole on that thing. You couldn't say anything.
Well, now we can, which is good. I think a little bit more freedom than American Freedom Radio, ironically.
Ironically, yeah.
Now, we're going off the topic of psychos and everything, because it's been done to death, and ironically none of the psychopaths that are in charge of the world have been killed yet, but regardless, it's quite a depressing topic, so we're going to talk about something else, like the nature of reality, spirituality, etc., and I wonder if there's actually any points that you want to make on that general kind of topic base, because I've been thinking about and what was it, Ayn Rand? What she used to say is that you can ignore reality, but you cannot ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. And I've had so many bloody new agers and annoying people that I've had to actually explain this kind of thing. It's like, no, you actually have responsibility, all right? Reality isn't something you just create off the top of your frickin' head like you imagine it, okay? It happens, and you interact with it. You're not the sole arbiter of creation yourself, as you believe.
Yeah, I believe it. I'm right down with that with you. I'm totally on that line of thought. I've been thinking a lot about that. Like, I wanted to see, well, you know, are these New Agers who say that you just have to think about something and it comes to pass, is there anything to that? Well, in a way, there kind of is, but it's not it's not a free lunch. It's very difficult to actually change the structure of reality, the quantum fabric. It's very, very difficult. Now, it does happen, and when it does seem to happen, it takes place under, you know, moments of extreme stress, like a mother who can lift a 3-ton car off the automobile off her child. That's literally ripping the matrix open. But that's only the terror and the fear of that child and extreme trauma seems to do it. And that's what's interesting. If you look at all the cases where people seem to have had, you know, altered reality, a lot of it seems to be negative. Have you noticed that? It seems to be negative. And that got me thinking and got me looking at black magic. And one of the reasons I think black magic is so seductive to many people is that it seems to be the version of the secret, you know, like the New Age, the secret, that actually gets the results quickest. It's almost like there are forces that allow people who indulge in the dark side to get a taste of good results in altering reality very, very easily and very quickly, in order maybe to hook them into it. And I've noticed that where someone comes in with a New Age thing and say, I just have to imagine, you know, I'll get the future I want, the money I want, the love that I want. It never happens to them. But yet the ones who seem to be the most, you look at the elites, for example, they seem to be right back 2,000-3,000 years obsessed with black magic and dark ritual. And the only reason they're doing it is because they're actually getting results, because that's why they're in power and that's why they're holding power. So it is interesting. I agree with you. Yeah, it definitely cannot be just altered by wishing about it or thinking about it. But there definitely seems to be something about the dark side. It's almost like the prostitution of magic, or the prostitution of this kind of idea of altering reality. It gets you instant results, like it gets you instantly, you know, involved. But you might get the kind of like the quantum version of an STD, in that it like will actually affect your soul. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I've been reading Dennis Wheatley, and he talks about like how black magic does get results, but you risk losing your soul. So that's very interesting.
It's like a shortcut.
To think about that stuff. Yeah, it's a shortcut. It's like mainlining to the, you know, right into the heart. It's like the hardcore element of it. But it comes with an enormous price, because it's like a drug dealer on the street. You can get very, very rich, or you can be shot at any moment.
Yeah, no benefit comes without its risks. And in fact, I was just thinking about this the other day. I was talking with a new agent there. Like, but my perception and my understanding of quantum physics means that I can create reality and collapse it the way I want. Okay, then. I'll tell you what. Let's do an experiment. Imagine that I agree with you. Is it working? No, it's not. Okay, so obviously your perception doesn't control reality. If anything, it probably doesn't control anything. If anything, you're probably currently under mind control, you nitwit.
And they'll come back with saying, oh, well, Vinny, you're very negative and you're in a low vibrational state. And this is where...
I'll show you a low vibrational state. It's called a fist in your face, you stupid.
And this is why you can't change it. You see, because it's the sort of an infantilization of the whole idea of it.
It's a circular reasoning that backs itself up. It's circular reasoning because it's circular reasoning sort of thing. And you can never argue them out of it, because they don't accept facts or reality because they believe that they don't actually exist, that there's no such thing as objective, measurable truth.
But even if there isn't, they're subject to it. The fact that if there's no such thing as measurable objective truth, then that's a fallacy in relation to everything they believe, because then they wouldn't be even in a position to actually even wish for the future, because they wouldn't exist. And they do exist. It's really bizarre. I can never figure out the New Age line on things, other than I know it's basically fairy tales and escapism for adults.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a religion. It's a new religion that is probably worse than all the other mainstream religions, because it's one where you don't believe in good or evil or doing the right thing.
Yeah. And, well, they actually don't believe in evil. And really, it's good that they actually believe in. And they think that evil only exists because we think about it. And this is a very dangerous road to go down, because if you listen to, you know, Carl Jung said, you don't become conscious or enlightened by imagining beings of light. You become conscious or enlightening by making the darkness manifest. Meaning, when you look into the darkness, that's when you see where the light is coming from. But they're doing the precise opposite of every wisdom tradition. This is what amazed me with the New Age. They claim that they're the latest in a long line of shaman and all kinds of indigenous traditions and, you know, druids and all this kind of thing. But if you look at all that stuff, it was all about the dark side. It was all about going into the dark side. And yet New Agers do the reverse of that. They only want to look at the light. Well, I got news for you. If you're doing that, you're going to get hit with a hell of a whack at some point.
You know, they're trying to practice and be like shaman and like, we're practicing enlightenment. But in an Irish accent, it's more like enshitenment, if you ask me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just a head full of...
That was a very bad Irish accent.
Oh, I'm sorry. In fact, have you noticed that it's actually very, very difficult to do a passable impression of an accent with somebody for whom it's actually a natural one?
Impossible.
It's actually not possible. The amount of people who've tried to copy my accent is just like, you sound totally like an Australian, bro. It's nothing like a New Zealand accent, you know. But anyway.
But that's because they have to, they don't get the, like, instead of saying fish and chips, they'll say fashion chips.
Well, it's more like it's a differentiation. Like, for example, in the vowel sounds, in New Zealand, we pronounce A's and I's and E's. In Australia, the I and the E have become the same vowel, and they've replaced the A as well. For example, a New Zealander will talk about a pin, you know, like you pin something to a wall, and they'll talk about a pen that you can write something down with. For an Australian, it's the same word. It's pin. Right? Yeah. And that's about it.
To me, the Australian and the New Zealand accents sound completely different. I could never mix the two of them up.
Oh, it is quite different. I mean, it just takes familiarity, more or less. And I find it's mostly Americans that get it wrong, primarily because the amount of perhaps foreign cultures that they've been exposed to in the very isolated hinterlands of the United States and American talk radio don't provide them any real examples of other countries' accents a lot of the time. And in so doing, they don't even know what you're saying, let alone be able to differentiate between the different accents.
About 10 years ago, I was working nights, and I used to get up in the afternoon and watch the first program on the TV was Shortland Street, which was a New Zealand soap.
Yeah, it's still going, unfortunately.
Still going, yeah. They go forever, those soaps, don't they?
I mean, it's just like there's a group of people in a room writing wank, more or less. Okay, somebody died, somebody cheated with somebody else, or a new character comes in that's from somewhere else, and they try to, and they're either a bad person or a good person, and they get screwed over, or what. It's basically every single storyline is more or less exactly the same, and it's New Zealand's longest running series in history. You know, it's the New Zealand version of The Simpsons, more or less.
And there's always, when all these same kind of soaps that are on all over the world, there's always the social engineering. Do you ever notice that, like, built into the storyline?
Oh, I've seen people get sucked into soap operas, and I found that they're capable of relating to these imaginary characters in the soap operas more than they are capable of relating to their own family or even themselves.
Yep. That's why the bad guys in soap operas have to be careful when they go out in public, because there's actually people who will attack them.
Who think that they're not... in fact, it's funny as you mention that, because there was a story... How long ago was it? I think maybe eight, nine years ago or something of that nature. We had an actress named Robin Malcolm, a very famous New Zealand actress who was who played a pivotal role on Shortland Street over a decade ago. And there was a pile-up on the highway, and she was... her car didn't crash, but she was right there, and she saw it all happen. And she played a nurse on Shortland Street. And she got out of her car, went to somebody else who was in an upturned car, and the person, like, cried out in relief, "Oh, thank God, it's the nurse!"
we see, and people talk about altering reality and changing reality. There are vast numbers of people in the Western world who are not even in this reality.
They can't even see what's in front of them.
They're locked into TV, and that to them is more real than the world they live in.
It's certainly a lot more exciting and a lot more fun and a lot more interesting than the world they live in, because instead of actually participating in the world they live in, going out and doing things, meeting new people, creating your own adventure and your own story, you start to live vicariously through other stories, and they're all fictional stories. You don't watch real documentaries or the news and emulate with a Palestinian freedom fighter or any of that stuff, do you? No. It's only the made up stuff that you want to emulate. Why is that? Is it because reality is such a depressing bunch of funk that it's just not worth looking at anymore?
In the Ray Bradbury novel Fahrenheit 451, it's made into a very good film in the 60s by Truffaut.
I see it, yeah.
Yeah, and there's Julie Christie's character of the wife. She doesn't want children. She wants more TV screens because she said it's more like a family growing up around me.
Ooh.
And that even predicted the reality TV, because she calls into the TV show and the TV show knows her name and then talks to her. The characters on the TV show talk to her from the TV screen. Her name is Linda, and she thinks they're specially talking to her. So she's actually more involved with the storyline in the soap opera than she is in her own life.
Yeah, I think that's about right today, isn't it? And I've noticed trying to have conversations with people while they're watching something, doesn't matter whether they're watching a TV show or a movie or anything, unless it's paused, they can't concentrate on anything that you're saying. Even if they're looking directly at you and not looking at the screen, the brain just doesn't work. It's simply a blank stare, and what? Can you say that again? Then you say it again, and they're still, what?
And there could be something totally pointless, like an ad for cottage cheese on, and they're more connected with that.
I mean, is this not real? For me, I've been thinking about this, and in fact was probably trying to think about it pretty intensely yesterday, is mind control, and how it's a lot more prevalent than people think, and it's a lot more simple and in your face than people think.
Well, I actually think it's the norm. I actually think most people are mind controlled. Yeah. I think they're completely, they don't even know who they are anymore. I think people are, you know, and it's easy for us to say that, okay, we've maybe broken that spell a bit, or a good bit. But, you know, you see so many people, they're not creatures of liberation or independent thought. Everything is either a social or cultural or a social circle archetype they have to fulfill at each different points in their life. There's no decisions made out of any kind of measured thinking, sitting back and processing it. It's all about, you know, oh well, I'm a certain age now, I have to get married. I'm a certain age now, I have to have kids, that kind of thing. I'm a certain age now, I have to have a mortgage. And that's, they have done an incredible job on the human race when you think about it. They really have.
Well, it's been a deliberate agenda for a long period of time, and even a former director of the CIA said that when our disinformation campaign, everything the American population believes will be the exact opposite of the truth. Are these people on the television something you can actually live your life through? Oh, you believe that they are, but it's not.
There was a story on Yahoo News today of some reporter was talking about how they discovered that vaccines do cause epileptic seizures in children. And he starts off the story by saying, this will give the anti-vaccine, you know, kooks hope. They actually will believe this is true, that vaccines cause seizures. And then went on to write a story about how vaccines do cause seizures. It's like the global... Yes, I'm not kidding you. This is how desperate, bizarre it's got. This
total
is
double thing, okay?
Yeah, total Orwellian doublespeak. War is peace, ignorance, slavery, that usual thing. And and you see that all the time in the global warming stories. You'll see stories saying that global warming is not happening, but it's still real.
we're correct, therefore we're crazy.
Yeah, and this is what eventually makes people throw in their towel and say, I don't want to think for myself anymore. Just tell me anything. Tell me anything and I'll believe it.
Well, it's almost like your ability to discern fact from fiction is very much tied to your ability to be human.
Yeah.
If you cannot do that, the differentiation, yes, this is real, no, that's not. You're no longer yourself. You're no longer human, are you? You're something else. You've been turned into a vessel.
Well, I'm glad you brought this up, because you and I know each other for a long time, and I've been listening to your show for a long time. And, you know, we often hear these memes, there's a great awakening happening. Do you believe there's a great awakening happening?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
That said, I have noticed that I've become a minor celebrity. I went out to chuck like $20 worth of gas in my car the other night, and the lady beside me at the gas station said, "Oh my God, you're Vinnie Eastwood!" And then I went to a cafe yesterday because there was a power cut. I couldn't boil any water for my coffee, and the person in the organic cafe, "Oh my God, you're Vinnie Eastwood!" So it's like I've become a minor celebrity. But does that mean that those people weren't awake before hearing about me, before noticing me doing what I'm doing in this country? I don't think so. There's
the same thing happens to me, and I do often think the same thing. Is this the sign of the wakening up? And then when you get talking to these people, they were generally listening to other shows or other people or talking to other in already on that path. It's almost like we've reached critical mass in this alternative movement. I don't see a great rush of other people coming in. Whereas, on the other hand, we seem to have lost a lot of people who probably waking up wasn't good for them. I've noticed there's less and less people now who are kind of depressed that they woke up and they're like, you know, they've gone to that stage where they thought there was going to be a great shift in the world that never happened. And then they're depressed. I've noticed a lot of them have vanished. So maybe we just have the right people woken up now. Maybe that's what's going on.
Sort of like some kind of a spiritual cull, you know. It's like if you don't have the strength to continue, what was it? If you're facing certain defeat, and then you accept it, that's actually where your defeat comes from, not from your certain defeat in and of itself. It's when you don't want to fight anymore that you've ever truly been defeated. And that's kind of what's happening in the truth movement to a large extent. Some people just, it's too much. And I'm not going to blame them. This is not easy. Okay,
no,
I've had co-hosts before. I've helped new people start up with radio stations before. And they come to nothing because they couldn't handle it. They expected rewards where there weren't any. Okay. The reason I'm doing it is not because I want rewards or I want fame or fortune or anything. I mean, sure, those would be nice, and I'm getting that to a certain extent, but it's not the reason why I do it. It's not the reason why I struggle to pay my rent every week because I don't have a slave job. That's not the reason. The reason is I don't have a freaking choice. It's either save humanity or watch it burn.
Yeah. And at the same time, too, I feel the same way also. And I've had very similar experiences to you. And then we get like, we have to deal with these loonies who could come after us. And we don't have that, you know, we don't have sort of like the power and protection, say, a big celebrity would have. But I have to say, the reason why I do it and still do it is I find this path incredibly interesting. Do you find it interesting as well? I love the fact that I learn so many new things and that, you know, there's always new discoveries. I find that like the best part of this.
I was once discouraged by a friend of mine years and years ago before I had even woken up. He said, "Vinny, you know what your problem is?" I go, "What?" He says, "You're trying to force good conversation on people." And I thought, "Wow, what a bastard of a friend I am." We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Check out our sponsors, the Crowdfunding Revolution by Kevin Lawton, the Range of Illusion by B. Holmes. Also, make sure you get yourself a blue shield and protect yourself from that nasty EMF radiation. MF doesn't stand for something like a swear word. It's more like magnetic frequencies. But also, make sure you get yourself some of that gourmet soap, kitchen soap. All right, it's literally better than Fight Club soap. And it's not even made from the fat of rich women. It's unbelievable. We'll be right back. Back, ladies and gentlemen, with my very special guest Thomas Sheridan from thomassheridanarts.com. That's Thomas with an H. Welcome back, bro. Now, we were just talking about people who kind of like go through the awakening process but then wind up going back to sleep again, right? I would say it's losing hope, losing faith, something like that. It's not an intellectual decision that they've made. It's a spiritual, emotional decision they make. No, the truth is no longer value to me. No, I no longer care. I just want money. I just want to be with my family and everything like that. As the world gradually closes around me, turns into a police state, and will eventually exterminate my family, okay? So no amount of logic would bring you to the conclusion that going back to sleep and going back to work and doing the same thing everybody else is doing would make any difference, right? That's just a stupid idea. Anybody who thinks about it for more than 30 seconds will come to that conclusion, which is why I've concluded that it's, again, as I said, not an intellectual decision that they're making to go back to sleep. It's an emotional one because they can't handle the stress, the pressure and the stress. They haven't found sufficient coping mechanisms.
And what makes them think things are going to be better if they go back? It reminds me a lot of these people who go on, you know, these people that have like a relationship and it breaks up. And then they go on an instant rebound relationship and do something stupid like get married in a hurry. It reminds me of that. And it's like all my problems will be solved now if I do this, if I don't look at it, if I throw myself into, you know, this impulsive major decision, it won't be a problem anymore. Everything will be back to the way it was. But it's like the old story, you know, you can never go home. And these people, like I was looking at one internet forum, a very, very popular one. And I would say at least 25% of the threads currently running on it are, I wish I never woke up. I wish I'd go back to who I was. Waking up didn't work out for me. And a lot of this had to do, as you say, they were expecting a reward, not necessarily a financial reward, but they really did believe that the world was going to wake up and then they suddenly wouldn't be alone and their friends and their family who laughed at them or ridiculed them would be proven wrong as the whole world joins together in the alternative movement, the truth movement, whatever you want to call it, and everything would be great. And these days, this never came. And they've been let down so many times. They've been let down by Anonymous, by Occupy, by all these, the Zeitgeist thing, by all the celebrities like the Russell Brands who they thought was going to change everything. They've been let down by all of it.
It's because they're stupid enough to believe that their old belief structure that somebody else will solve all my mother fracking problems for me is still true. It's not true.
They haven't figured out that the only one that can save their own ass is themselves. They have not figured that out. And that to them is the most terrifying realization of all. Because that is the ultimate waking up, is the day you realize that no religion, no God, no movement, no nothing is going to do this for me. I've got to do it myself. That's what it comes down to. They want to wake up. They want this great world as long as they don't have to do anything about it. Someone else gives it to them.
Yeah. It's freaking stupid, it's freaking lazy, and it's a product of mind control, All right.
And Christianity, it comes from the idea that a Jesus or a Messiah will come.
You know. Actually, this is the irony, because it doesn't even say that in the Bible. First of all, it says you're going to suffer for 7 long years of pain, persecution, and the worst kind of crap you could ever see in Satan's dominion on earth, and then you get raptured. It's not suddenly somebody's going to show up just because you've got a little bit of faith and say, oh, I believe in Jesus Christ, therefore nothing bad is ever going to happen to you and you never have to fight evil. That's the misinterpretation that's been deliberately put out there. It's to rob people of their strength, I think. If you put your belief in something that has no power, like a savior, then you will have no strength, because you'd believe that your savior is somebody else and not you.
It's a spiritual insurance policy. I paid off for the big payoff of when it's going to come in. The savior will save us. And this then gets projected to everything. And it's the whole truth movement is full of it. Who's going to be the next one who's going to lead us? Who's the next one who's going to save us? Who's the next one that's going to bring us? And they move like an addiction from one's, you know, salvatory, you know, concept to the next. And they never seem to learn that, like, you shouldn't be putting your hopes in these things that have obviously been, in 9 times out of 10, they've been set up by the intelligence services anyway to filter you out of the truth movement and into something like Occupy or something like that. And it just goes on, and they never learn, because they don't want to learn. And then that's what makes them eventually become despondent and say, forget about it, I'm not going to be woke up anymore, I'm going to go back into the way I was. And it changes nothing, because they'll just be triply depressed.
Well, I think it's like if you have faith and hope in things that for which you see no benefit or no results, stop having faith and hope in those things and start doing something else that will actually give you benefit, that will actually get you results. I mean, that's the logical thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, instead of pining for, you know, Monsanto to go out of business, go and grow your own organic vegetables. Instant, you know, insurgency. Things like that. You can do all kinds of things, little things in your own life, while highlighting and working towards getting them big time scumbags out. You can have little victories in your own life on the way. But the problem is they don't do that. They want everything to just like be a Hollywood movie, where the hero wins, gets the girl at the end, kills all the bad guys and rides to the sunset. Life doesn't work like that. And as you said, they're still mind controlled by expecting that.
You ever seen anybody build a house before? Well, did the roof go on first or did the foundations go first? You freaking idiots. All right. You got to build it from the ground up. Okay. Look, I've been in this game for like over 5 years, okay, and 2 years previously to starting going out and doing all the video and everything. All I was an angry, depressed young guy who had no hope. You know, the reason I had no hope, because all I was doing was listening to truth content and I wasn't creating any. I wasn't interacting with anybody else who was brimming with truth, that kind of thing. And so as a result, I got depressed, I got really angry, and I destroyed most of the relationships in my life, okay? That's what happens. The first relationship I destroyed was my relationship with myself. Sometimes that actually needs to happen so that you can rebuild yourself up psychologically from the ground floor up. Okay, I've spent my entire life believing stuff that's not true. Now I've found out that it's not true, and I need to actually do something about it. What do I do, though? What are my unique talents? What are my unique gifts? What are my skills? I happen to be an entertainer, so I wound up turning into an infotainer, all right? It's simply a little transition, but the amount of work that had to go through, I think maybe 2009 through 2012, it was breadline, you know? I think maybe halfway through 2012, I was getting enough regular donations so that I could at least pay my bills without scaring the hell out of my my wife every day, telling her what the bank balance is, you know? And she told me, and so many other people told me, give up. Stop. You're destroying your life. And I said, no, I'm not destroying mine. I'm saving yours.
It reminds me of the tarot card, the Tower. That tower has to fall down and be destroyed for something new to be built up again. People have to understand that this sometimes a self-sacrifice of yourself does not have to be a horrific thing. It's part of this kind of this. It's almost like, you know, the caterpillar turning into the moth. I could only imagine the kind of agony that when the pupa goes through as it's changing its body from this like worm-like creature into this like beautiful winged creature that's capable of flight. Could you only imagine the contortions and the pain that the caterpillar subjects itself to in order to take flight? That's exactly how we have to live our lives. And especially when you go into this, like you say, this field, you have to be prepared to suffer that crystallization before you reach the point of being able to take flight and fly. And it seems like a very, very long time while you're in that pupa and while you're twisting and contorting and you're feeling all those pains as these new limbs grow. But there's no other way to do it. And this is like what brings us back to the New Agers. They just don't seem to understand that. They just want to close their eyes and imagine that they're a butterfly and it will just happen. It doesn't happen like that. Nature does not create transformation without destruction. And this is not spoken enough, I don't think. And I'm glad you brought it up, because when people tell me, oh, I'm going through a really bad time at the moment, I wish I never got into this stuff, I always say, well, that's because you're growing, you're changing. And this is growing pains of the psyche. And if you ride with this and don't let it overpower you, you're only going to win from it in the end.
Be grateful for your pain and suffering, for there are great rewards ahead, even though it doesn't seem like it right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. Nothing, you know, nothing, not the universe manifests nothing without trauma. It's as simple as that. Everything has to, you know, a seed has to break through its shell to grow into a flower or a tree. It's just a woman has to go through pain to give birth, and all animals do. It's just how it is. It'll never change. And to expect a free ride in this reality by just thinking you have to wish it like that will never happen. I think that's also why people who win the lotto are generally not happy or they go crazy. Yeah. It's because they didn't earn the money. I always remember the first time I got paid to play music, it was like I got paid like £10. And that wasn't a lot, but it was like the sweetest tenor I ever made in my life, because it came from me playing music. People who win the lotto are like New Age. They're like a good analogy for the New Ager types who just want instant spiritual enlightenment. It's empty. It has no depth because there was no suffering behind it.
Well, I think the whole New Age philosophy is sort of like, I don't know. Oh, we always get everything we want if we wish for it. Really? Are you telling me Santa always brought you the toys that you wanted and didn't get you socks once? Yeah. Is that what you're telling me? I mean, what you want is very rarely what you get. I mean, and more to the point, even if you're suffering through pain and trauma and everything, it's still no freaking guarantee. You have to be mindful about who you are and what you're doing. Otherwise, you wind up driving yourself off a cliff or driving yourself mad. I don't know. I don't know if you've seen this happen, Thomas, but because people refuse to come to this realization about their own personal power and their ability to get over stuff, you know, and just think back on their life and go, man, it's a wonder I'm still alive. Of course, this must be easy enough to survive this whole awakening thing, considering what I've already been through. I don't come to that realization. And they don't maintain their sanity as a result. They go totally crazy. Like, what was it? All caps commenters. You know the kind I'm talking about?
Yeah. And what you said there about you don't always get what you want, but I will tell you something that's true. We're going to be kind of like esoteric about it. You do get what you need. You do get what you need, even if it's not what you want and not what you think you need. But when I look back at my life, even the bad times have been a blessing, because they lit a fire under my backside and moved me on to something else. again, it's personal evolution. And that's always been about evolution, where people have been conditioned and brainwashed and mind-controlled to expect a revolution.
Which they don't even realize means to go in a circle.
Yeah, to revolve right back to where you started.
Yeah. Now, rather than revival or renewal, you know, that kind of thing, I mean, I saw the political system more or less as a computer program. I saw the financial system as more or less just a story, right? And so if you want to solve the political system, hit the reset button. If you want to solve the debt problem, rewrite the story. Pretend the debt doesn't exist. Because the only reason it's there is because we're pretending it exists.
Yeah.
But of course,
I thought you can't explain it to the average person though. When you tell them the country owes so much money to this, that, and the other, and when you say to them, but to who do they owe it? Oh, the banks. Why? Oh, that's just how the world is. That's just how it is. It just has to be. It does. No country owes no. Like when they say the earth is so many trillions in debt, who do we owe it to? The Martians? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, they don't even get it. It's like following through to logical conclusions. You know, it just doesn't happen because it can't. If it does happen, then boom, you're no longer asleep. And it's usually just one realization. It's either realizing that your religion's a scam designed to rob you of your personal power to believe in a higher deity that isn't actually there to help you so that you can continue going to church and getting spiritual guidance by a pedophile who's asking for donation money so that he can bury Irish children in a septic tank, or giving up your faith in the financial system, which you currently base your entire economic existence on, faith, right? That's the entire reason why this little piece of money in this hand has any value whatsoever is because we've got faith in it, just like a religion. If you lose your faith, it's like losing your mother. The thing that born you into this world and the thing that gave you all your hope, all your freedom, the thing that comforted you when you were feeling bad, the person who talked nice to you and made you feel better when you were crying because somebody hurt you, is gone. And suddenly you realize, I'm all alone. It's like being a psychological orphan in a world, in a giant global orphanage. And there are nothing but really nasty nuns who have no Christianity about them whatsoever.
And they still are pillars of the community, and you still have to have faith. You reminded me of something. I met this Greek woman years ago, and she said to me, we were talking about religion, and she says, don't you have faith? And I said, you mean like faith in God? And I says, no, I don't believe in anything. And honest to God, she looked at me like I just admitted I was an axe murderer. The people are so conditioned to believe that fate is a normal thing, that you have faith in something that someone else has invented. That's as fundamental to your humanity as your biological or your neurological processes. How they got away with that spell is incredible to me. I still can't believe they made that one fly, and yet they do. You must have faith. Faith in what? Well, faith in what we're told to have faith in. It's quite incredible.
Well, see, funnily enough, I actually really do agree with that woman, but in the direct opposite way to what she might think. You know, I do have faith, but it's not in some kind of orthodoxy. It's not in anything mysterious or mystical. It's simply a way out back door when all else fails, when there is nothing left. Only then do I say, yep, I've got faith. I've got faith.
Yeah, I agree with that. She didn't mean it that way. She was specifically talking about, you know, Jeebus and the Bible and everything.
Exactly. Do you have faith in one specific thing that one king rewrote because he wanted to have a divorce and then got excommunicated from the Roman Catholic Church, which caused a massive, huge extermination of unbelievers back in the day? You don't believe in the merits of that belief structure? You're the devil!
Or a bunch of, you know, Greek and Armenian bishops who got together 1,000 years ago in Turkey, and then put all these books together that they decided they're going to call it the Bible and couldn't figure out which ones to use, then decided the best ones would be the one that gives absolute power to kings. You don't believe in that?
Well, you know, maybe they call it the Bible because they're trying to see how much bull people would buy.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I'm terrible when I laugh at my own jokes. It's just not fun. Hey, in fact, Thomas, I've been told by a number of people, like, I've been told that I'm just not funny. And I'm starting to actually kind of, like, get onto the board where it's like, you know what, actually, a lot of the jokes I say just really aren't that funny. And in fact, some of them are almost as traumatic to listen to as the most horrific conspiracy theory. In so doing, listening to this radio show and hearing my terrible jokes and hearing about horrible, heinous, scary conspiracies, I think it kind of lessens the blow somewhat because you've got something a little bit worse by comparison to cushion the blow, as it were.
I don't know. I kind of liked your jokes and your humor stuff. I liked when you were on the old station. You did the mafia guy with the hat and everything. I thought that was very good.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. In fact, considering you're doing that, Thomas, what I'll do is I will put the Godfather theme song back into the catalogue, and I'll do an intro of that nature very soon as well, indeed. So that'll be nice. Other than that, here's another thing that I've noticed about people who wake up and then go back to sleep and or get bitter. They're not enjoying themselves. They're not having fun, are they?
You know? No, they lose their sense of humor. Oh, how, you know, they don't understand gallows humor. I'm a great believer in gallows humor.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, people in the military and the services, they'll tell you that in the heat of battle, they were cracking jokes and making fun of things that happened. It's the way you get through it. This is what a lot of people who are like really uptight and get stuck in cults or in religions, that's one of the things that these groups take from these people, is their ability to laugh, their ability to, they don't get satire. They don't even understand what it is.
How many jokes are there in the Bible, Thomas? There's none, are there?
Let me think. Is there any jokes in the Bible? Let me see.
You know, is there like a rabbi, a priest, and a minister walk into a synagogue?
Yeah, there's a couple of sick ones, though. There's, like, Job. Like, God plays a trick on Job by keep making his life horrible. So that's, like, the kind of psychopathic jokes. And there's also, like, Abraham and Isaac, stab your son. Oh, okay. I was only joking. You know, that kind of thing. That kind of humor. No, there's no jokes in it. There's no jokes in any religion. In fact, look at Islam. You can't look how crazy they go if you even, like, do anything about, like, Muhammad,
like, if you can't, it's
mental.
Actually illegal. It's a death sentence if you take the Lord Muhammad and make a joke out of him.
Yeah.
All right. So see, this is how important humor is. It's been banned in every single Orthodox religion.
And every mind control cult. Yep.
I wonder what the intention is. I think it's maybe because, which reminds me, Thomas, legislation got passed in New Zealand about 5-6 years ago, making it illegal to make fun of politicians.
You're kidding me.
It's illegal to make jokes about it. I don't know why they haven't arrested me yet. I've made countless freaking jokes about them. I think it would be because nobody's been prosecuted for it as yet, and people still do the political cartoons, but they're too afraid to enforce it because of the implications of not being able to have humour in the political sphere at all, and be a jailable offence.
They did the same in Ireland with religion. They passed this crazy blasphemy law. Some Muslim group lobbied the government in 2009 to like put this law in. They probably gave the political party money or something. And you can't actually joke about it. Now, they busted nobody on it, because if they did, they would just look really bad. But they just put it on the books as a token thing. And so, like, you know, I was on an Irish radio station a few years ago, and I says, you know, I've got this Bible in my hand, which I'm going to burn. And then I said, onto a CD.
Oh, shoot, that's good. That's good. We'll be right back after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, my very special guest from Ireland is Thomas Sheridan. His website is thomassheridanarts.com. And if you would like to, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and check out our sponsors there. I'm trying to push now, ladies and gentlemen, and I mean really push. I don't mean to pressure you or anything, but I want you to please donate $5 a month. All right, sign up today and use the PayPal button, or if you happen to be in New Zealand and you want this content to keep being produced, please go to the website and start up a regular automatic payment either into the Kiwi Bank or through the PayPal. There's a reason why I'm doing this is, other than the fact that I really dislike to a large extent having to beg you all for money, I really appreciate you all listening to the show, but sometimes listening's not enough, and people having their ear bent towards you doesn't necessarily make the landlord go, hey, you've got listeners, that's fine, we'll just let you off the rent. It just doesn't happen. Unfortunately, we still live in a new world order monetary system, and I hate the people who come up to me and say, well, Vinny, you could just print your own money and you could be a free man on the land and all of that kind of stuff. Look, I understand that. However, that takes, like, the Free Man Manual, like 900 pages of study plus going through the court and all of that kind of stuff. I hate court. I've been arrested for weed. I ain't going back by any stretch of the imagination. I don't even like going to court to film my fellow activist friends giving presentations to corrupt judges and stuff like that, because it's so bleep boring. Just give me a little bit of coin and I'll keep you entertained in perpetuity. That's my promise to you. Other than that, might want to check out our sponsors who are also listeners to the show, who simply contributed, not because I'm really going to necessarily return all their investments and everything back to them, but because they simply want to support the show and they want this kind of information to keep continuously getting out there. Because I don't know if you've realized this, ladies and gentlemen, but there ain't nobody else in the truth movement, either in New Zealand or in talk radio, that is talking about all this really serious stuff that we do and is cracking incredibly lame jokes at the same time to help you deal with the scary information. We'll be right back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. If you don't laugh, you'll cry, because the world's so full of chaos and madness. If you have to laugh about it, or you will go friggin' nuts. And my very special guest is Thomas Sheridan from thomassheridanarts.com. Now, we're talking about a whole range of different issues, just more like kind of the sociological issues that you actually approach when you stop believing lies that the establishment tells you. Really, it's quite traumatic, right? Because you realize that, oh my God, most of my life I've been under trauma-based mind control. And now I'm listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and it's humor-based mind control. I thought it was actually quite a unique discovery, you know, is that you can actually destroy mind control by making jokes and making fun of it. Isn't that interesting? Yep. Isn't that positive? I thought so. And of course, the New Agers will tell me that there is nothing negative, and so therefore, whatever I'm trying to do that is positive isn't positive at all, which is stupid, because you're dumb, and you're brainwashed. Shh. Just shh.
Someone just donated $1 to my Dick Starter program, so I'm on my way.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay, excellent. Excellent. Just like with Dick Starter, every little bit helps. Okay. That was really rude. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. even the non-heterosexual ones. Okay, moving right along in the Muppet Show sense of the word, I wanted to think about what's been happening just recently, because there's a whole lot of very serious issues that are happening in the world media spectrum, and to be honest, Thomas, you might even be as little up to date with all the terrible stuff that's going on in the world right now as I am, because I have no freaking idea. I have no mainstream television in the house and no mainstream radio in my car. I'm literally in some kind of an information black hole, which you might find pretty ironic for a so-called truth-telling radio talk show host, ladies and gentlemen. I can assure you that most things in life are a cruel irony. But
I'm the same. If I didn't have, like, the internet, like, stories popping up here and there, I'd be, like, living on a desert island. I'd be like one of these Japanese soldiers that, like, didn't know the war was over for 50 years. I would have absolutely no idea what's going on in the mainstream. None. Zero.
Now, here's the irony. I feel radically more informed.
Isn't that interesting? Because you're able to filter out the BS and you can get right down to the meat of things.
Well, it means that you are forced by situation, more or less, to think about things. Process information rather than gather new information that you never think about or process at the time that you're listening to it.
Also, by not watching the mainstream media, you're not under their magic spells. You're not under their rituals. So they're using, like you said, the trauma-based mind control to have you worried about interest rates or terrorism. When you don't pay attention to mainstream media, you don't know about that stuff, so therefore you're not screwed up by it.
Well, it's almost like we're doing sort of like the opposite of what the New Agers do. They ignore the existence of negativity, whereas we've realized which negativity is real and which is just a manufactured fabrication of BS. And so ignore that, you know? Ignore the fake fear and actually, you know, click onto the real stuff. I'm not saying, oh, be afraid, be very, very afraid. Well, in fact, maybe I am. Because my fear is a great motivator to me. It's my fear that gets me up in the morning, you know? Oh, my God, World War III could be starting today or tomorrow. Maybe I'd better do something about that, you know, perhaps put a bit of good vibes out there in some form of a ripple effect fashion. I don't know if I'll be successful. I don't even know if I'm going to survive through the next decade or goodness knows what of Agenda 21 setup. To be honest, I'm not actually really overly concerned. What difference does it make whether or not, what was it I was thinking yesterday, Thomas? I really want to get your perspective on this. Do you know how you're going to die? I don't. And so to be fatalistic about my actions and what they mean in every single way, shape, and form, and what I'm actually going to accomplish after I die is kind of like an exercise in futility. Because, hey, you're forgetting, I'm right here right now and I can actually do stuff without being afraid of things that haven't happened yet and may never happen.
That's the difference between fear and anxiety. Fear, like you said, the fear that gets you up in the morning and has you like fighting the scumbaggery, that's a survival, sort of like a warrior instinct. That's a very different thing than what most people have today. Most people today have anxiety. And our ancestors in a pre-sort of like civilized time didn't really have anxiety. This is why indigenous people are much more happy and content. And also why poor people are generally happier and content than people that have rich people or people who are upper middle class, because they don't have the anxieties about losing what they already have. Anxiety is probably the main sort of like black magic spell they use to control people. They have people, you know, terrified of interest rates that our mortgage will fly up. They have them, but it may not happen. The news uses anxiety and has people about worrying about things that may not happen. That's a very dangerous, toxic thing, because you're actually wasting vast amounts of your psychic energy, your personal energy, your psychological energy on something that may not come true, and chances are it won't. And even if it didn't, you would still survive. But that fear that you would, if we lived in the jungle, that fear of animals, that's a very healthy thing, because that's a survival instinct. They've taken away people's fear in terms of the survival instinct and replace it with something truly appalling called anxiety. And that's really the trauma-based program that they run on people today. The anxiety, the terror of things that will never actually happen. And even if they do, they'll survive them.
Mm. Yeah, that's kind of like, what was the realization I had yesterday? As well? Oh yeah, high school. It's a trauma-based mind control program. I mean, think about it. Group punishment. If you question, you get punished. Authorities cannot be questioned or proven wrong. And if you do, they punish you even harder. And if you do, and it's same as the military. It's the same as med school. Same as law school. And it's almost the same in politics as well. Is you need constant anxiety from your authorities in order to prevent you from doing what is right, especially thinking.
It all comes out of the whole behaviorism thing, you know, like Watson and all those people back in the late 1800s, Pavlov, the idea of like making people responsive animals. They have no free will of their own. Just keep them responding, keep them, you know, responding to stimuli that we create. And if we take the stimuli away from them, their blood pressure increases, their heart rate increases, they become much more frightened, well, anxiety really. And that's all about that. But even the way they get us to police ourselves, you have in, say, in high school, they gave the example of like the teachers and the whole curriculum, and you have to pass your exams at the end of it and everything. But within the students themselves, there's all kinds of control systems. Like who's the one on the football team? Who's the best looking one? Who's the one that gets the girl? Who's the ones that we pick on? Who's the one that we bully? And that's them teaching us through this. That's why I'm totally in favor of homeschooling. That's them teaching us to police ourselves when we leave school.
And sure enough, they do. I've seen so many people who are very well educated who have stopped thinking long before their education was over. Have you noticed that?
Well, that's very common. The more educated a person becomes, particularly in academia, the more closed-minded they are. You know, the old joke of PhD, pilot higher and deeper. That's a lot of truth to that. By the time they reach their master's degree, unless they kind of wake up or switch it off, they are literally robots. The academic world is just creates robots. It just creates people who can no longer think outside the box, especially when they're after the second or third year in college, especially if they're doing a degree like a master's degree and going on for a PhD. It's over. You will never, ever, ever get those people to think independently, because they can't, because their whole lives have been geared towards 20 odd years of doing exactly what they're told. And they become psychologically and cognitively institutionalized, that they cannot function without a system, a format, or a process.
So it's more or less, I am going to restrict you and give you all these rules to govern your creativity, because these rules destroyed my creativity, and you're going to make me look bad if I don't destroy yours.
Yeah. It's wicked. There's nothing universal about university. It's all these specialized robot degrees, yeah.
Yeah. Well, even my brother, who's still kind of a little bit brainwashed, like he's starting to wake up the vaccines and things like that. He's a chiropractor, and he did like 7 years of study inclusive. I think he had to repeat 2 years or something, because he was like me in my last year of high school, you know, just partying it up, you know, as you do. Because I had to repeat my last year of high school, by the way, before I could go to university. And what's happened to him is he told me that, you know, if you want to get a class or something like that, if you want to be something, just go sit in those classes and be the most vocal person, asking the good questions to the lecturer and stuff like that. And then after a couple of weeks or months or whatever, the lecturer will realize that you're not actually supposed to be in that class, but he'll just let you in anyway. And then he told me, the other thing is, you will not learn who you are or anything of value while you're in university. Basically, you just have to take all that garbage on board, and then as soon as you get out of university with your qualification, that's when your learning begins. Now, I found that very ironic, coming from my brother, who's very sort of, I don't know, he's sort of weird. He's sort of like half me, half of my open mind, and half of who I was when I was asleep and used to think everybody who smoked weed or smoked cigarettes was a real idiot, whereas today I still believe the same thing, except I just smoke more weed and cigarettes.
So he's like woke up, but he's still on one side, but on the other side he's still playing the game.
Well, you know when you need to take a piss in the morning and you can't be bothered getting out of bed because it's too cold? You know you're not asleep, but you don't want to get up and do what you have to do in order to actually be able to go back restfully to sleep because you badly need to let it out. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Psychologically speaking.
Interesting.
Yeah. And my analysis may be incorrect. I haven't really had full discussions with them on this yet, but here's the thing. Ultimately, family members are the hardest people to deal with, especially if you're a truther who doesn't like the idea of mind control or stupidity or living your life for vacuous, pathetic purposes, particularly if you notice the people around you who are closest to you, who you've grown up with in the same house, are still devoted to those things that you've realized long ago were not true. And because you're related to them, and because they know you very well, they're a hell of a lot harder to convince than anybody else that you would ever come up against.
Big time. And I always tell people, don't bother trying to convince anyone. Just don't bother. You'll only end up in a world of heartbreak and frustration. And you'll probably alienate yourself from people that you shouldn't alienate yourself from. Just because they're not woken up doesn't mean that you should wake them up. Although people do it out of love and they want to save their families and things like that. I mean, I was talking to this one guy, right? And he had spent the weekend, his girlfriend, they had two kids together. This is a guy in England. And his girlfriend went off for a long weekend with her mother or whatever, and with the kids. And he was on his own, and he started watching conspiracy videos about reptilians and all this stuff. And it blew his mind over the weekend. So he had one of those sort of like almost charismatic evangelical awakenings where he just let it all into his head and he became like a born again Christian within 3 or 4 days. So when she came back and the first thing he does is grab her. And he says, you're not going to believe it. The world is run by reptilians and the queen is one and they're from another planet and all this stuff.
Oh, that'd be a hell of a...
And he said, he told me now, he's okay now, but he told me that the look on her face at that instant, he knew the relationship was over. And he wished he never opened his mouth.
Well, I don't know. If you love something, let it go, man. And if you can't have a relationship that's built on trust... where you can actually really just have faith in each other. And see, this comes back to that faith argument as well. People have more faith in Jesus and God that ain't going to come and save them if come hell or high water than they do in each other and than they do in themselves.
That's absolutely true. There's so much truth to that. And that, you know, and this whole thing of like, the fact that like, I couldn't understand. I hear stories a lot of couples who have broken up, like married couples, because like she woke up and he didn't, or he woke up and she didn't. And I'm like, what kind of relationship did you have to begin with? Like, this shows how dangerous it is for people to hear this information, that they would actually leave their husband or wife or their girlfriend or a boyfriend, someone that they would loved or had kids with, because this person now believes like that 9/11 was an inside job. Just think about that. You would actually leave a person because of that. And yet it happens all the time.
I've been married to you for 20 years, but you believe that our US government would kill our own people in order to start a war. I'm going to get divorced with you.
Yeah.
It was like, who are they married to? Are they married to you or to the state?
They're married to the state. Mm-hmm. What are you telling me? You're trying to tell me that cancer can be cured and they've no interest in curing it because there's a lot of money to be made in it?
Yeah.
Goodbye. Who are you married to? Him or Big Pharma?
Who do you love? You know?
Yeah, who do you love? Big Pharma press release or the man who went out every day or the woman who went every day and, you know, brought home money, worked 10 hours a day, or the woman who like had kids for you? Which do you love most? That or the state? I mean, it's incredible. I mean, it's really is true. Like when people do, when you wake up, I didn't really have the waking up process. I was kind of woken up all my life. But the ones that do have that waking up process, by God, do you find out who the people in your life who love you really are. You really do.
I only have one friend that I've been friends with for longer than five, six years since I woke up. Only one. And that's my mate Jono, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody else, every friend that I've ever had in my entire freaking life is gone. And I may never talk to them again. Until such a point as they wake up on their own accord, realize that I was telling the truth, and get back in contact with me. I live in hope of that day, but I'm not going to expect it to happen. And in the meantime, the pool of friends that I have to pick from has actually grown exponentially, because the people that I'm making friends with now, I'm not making friends with because they're drinking buddies. I'm not making friends with because they're stoner buddies or anything like that. I'm making friends with them because I can actually have a real conversation with them, and they don't judge me for what I think. They judge me by who I am. And because who I am is a good person, they don't misjudge me.
Yeah, that's another thing too. Is like, even if someone believes the craziest things, I mean, I have friends who, you know, believe in stuff that I just think is just so out there, to do with aliens and everything. But because they're good people and their heart is in the right place, and even if I think what they believe in is way off the mark, that's nothing to do with how I feel about them as a human being. Yeah, that's very rare in society. Most people, like we were talking about earlier on, about people just like going with the flow and getting married and having kids when they feel like it. You know, when the society tells them. The exact same thing exists with these like relationships and friendships. I'm your friend as long as you don't change. I love you as long as. And then it really makes you wonder, well, do most people in society even actually have proper relationships?
I had a the reason I left university, Thomas, is because I wrote an essay about how bad television was. The lecturer's argument was that television's good because it gives people something in common to talk about and relate on. So let me get this straight. The thing that's bringing people together and giving them in common, and the reason why you think television's so dandy and so fracking good for everybody, is that they can relate to each other over something that isn't frickin' real. Yeah. And they gave me a D when I wrote an essay saying otherwise, even though it was backed up by 60 years of commentators and researchers that I'd read through and backed up my arguments with every point on the bibliography. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
See? That's how it works. You don't have relationships with anything real. And as a result of not having relationships with anything real, when reality does come along, you find it really difficult to relate to it.
It's so true. Yeah, it's unbelievable what people are like. They're not even people in some ways. Like what they're just stimuli to the control system. That's really what they are. All they are at this point. So many of them. They're behavioral robots functioning according to stimuli, reward systems, punish and reward systems that the actual control system creates, and they live their lives according to it. It's incredible how people can live like that and be happy is beyond me.
Well, the elite have published documents on this. They're saying that they want to be able to have people under such sufficient mind control programming through the television, radio, or even psychotronic weapons and things of that nature, that they will be able to control the average person, like the average person controls a car. And I don't know about you, man, but I look around and I see people under control. I see them going about their daily business. I was having a conversation with my friend John Eisen from Uncensored Magazine yesterday, and he's just had a bit of a health problem, and he's not feeling too well, and his magazine is basically one of the only truth magazines in this country, that and Ian Wishart's Investigate magazine. But what we were talking about was Russia, and how big and bad this Ukraine situation, and how it could easily turn into World War III. And even though John's got health problems, he said, look, if I die and manage to help put a hand in preventing World War III, so be it. I'm not going to take a day off. I'm going to take a week off. You know, I'm 65 years old. I've lived a good life. And saving humanity is kind of my goal here. And I recommended that he take a little bit of time off just to you know, rest, recover, recuperate, and then get back into it. But he wouldn't listen, because that's what I would have done in his position. But he's not me, right? Everybody has their own decision, and I respect him for it. That's what a friendship does, is you get different perspectives, and regardless of what that perspective is, you can either argue it or accept it. You don't like, you don't pigeonhole the other person and say everything you do is bad because you said one thing that I don't like. Incidentally, you remember how we were talking about Zeitgeist and it kind of like put people off? Zeitgeist was saying we're going to do all this and the Venus Project and blah, 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 blah. Well, one of the women that I met yesterday in the cafe, kind of like my minor celebrity thing, seen her at a Zeitgeist meeting the other day, and she told me that she did listen to me until I did one show where we were where we were bagging feminism, and then she stopped talking to me, and then she stopped listening to me. And I said, so let me get this straight. You know that I interview 5 completely different people a week on completely different topics. And because you heard one topic on one day from one guest that offended you, you choose not to listen to any of the other topics or any of the other guests that you do agree with.
Yep. That happens to me all the time.
I'll
see people comment on the internet. Oh, I was on his Facebook page until he said something I didn't like and I got off. It's so childlike. It's like this infantile, childlike mentality. It's incredible.
This is a 50-year-old woman telling me this, bro.
That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter what age, Jared. That's what they're like. You say one thing with some of these people that they don't like, and that's everything you do is damned. As if their lives are so perfect. It's the most strangest thing. It's the most bizarre thing. But yeah, I've experienced it many times.
Yeah, it's guilt by association, really, isn't it? You listen to the Vinny Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen, guilty as charged. And we will be right back after the break. Please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. We're encouraging people end over end, ecstatically. Please sign up for a monthly gifting subscription of at least $5 a month. There's options on there to do more or less if you feel like it. But at the end of the day, I think $5 a month for 20 radio shows a month and 20 videos of hours each of content that you won't really hear anywhere else, that actually works effectively as a form of therapy for this trauma that you must be going through. If you hear any of this information, and don't ignore it, okay? Please donate monthly to the Vinny Eastwood Show. And if you actually want something for your money other than content that's available to you and everybody else in the entire world for free, not calling yourself a shit, is the Blue Shield devices, which can protect you from that EMF radiation. Dude, seriously, the other day I unplugged my Blue Shield to put a new computer in for the wife, right? So she could watch her shows on a slightly better screen. And I unplugged the Blue Shield in order to do it. Within 20 minutes, I was angry with her for some reason. And I was angry at everything for some reason. I was like, what the? Why am I feeling so awful? Why am I feeling so tense and angry? Just, I don't know if anybody's ever given up smoking, but it's like that. But it happens within about 30 minutes of unplugging your Blue Shield. So it's kind of like you don't even notice that they're working until they're not working no more. So yeah, you can click on the Blue Shield banner on the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. And also, biggest mention of all goes to Volcania Consciousness Coffee. There's a banner on the homepage there. They are sponsoring. This is a new business model, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. A business that is set up specifically so that every single dollar of profit can go to another business. All right? You ever think about that? A business set up specifically for the purposes of donating all profits to a charity. All right? Those two charities that Volcania Coffee have selected are The People's Voice, affiliated with David Icke in the UK, and The Vinny Eastwood Show in New Zealand. So that puts me right up there, doesn't it? I was quite happy when they approached me about that. So please go to the VolcaniaInternational.com website and get some of their coffee today. And don't forget about the High Tea Cafe in New Lynn in New Zealand here. They give me $20 a week into my bank account, which really helps to incur the interest of the debts. Man, I really wish I had enough money to pay off all my debts. But you never get what you want. You only get what you need. And that's the way of it. We'll be right back. final segment of the Vinnie Eastwood Show at the vinnieeastwoodshow.com. It's the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. If you don't laugh, you'll cry. My very special guest is Thomas Sheridan. ThomasSheridanArts.com is his website. He's an expert on psychopaths, and haven't you written 2 books on it? We don't really kind of want to go into the topic material of psychopaths. Basically, it's been, as I said in the first segment, it's been freaking done to death. And Thomas is tired of it. I'm kind of tired of it. Trust me, ladies and gentlemen, if you ever want to look into psychopaths, you don't have to look far. And so sometimes you just kind of have to block it out. So that it doesn't destroy your balanced chi levels. Thomas, welcome back.
Hey, I've got, Vinny, I've 2 books on psychopaths, Puzzling People and Defeat of Demons. I've 1 book on social engineering called The Anvil of the Psyche. And I've just come out with a new book that anyone who's read has been raving about at the moment. It's called Valpurgis Night, Volume 1. And it's about the esoteric history of National Socialism and the occult in Germany at the beginning of the 20th century, which is something that really has completely taken me over in the last couple of years. I've been fascinated by it.
Well, why don't you talk about that then, mate? Give us we've got 25 minutes to promo that new book.
Well, how this came about was that I wanted to take all the things I'd learned about social engineering and psychopathy and then start exploring it in a sort of a historical framework. And I'd heard these stories about National Socialism was actually rooted in the occult, and that's why they used all this cult symbolism. And I didn't really know how true that was. And so about 3 years ago now, I started looking into that. And I was completely stunned at how deep the esoteric black magic aspect of not only National Socialism, but much of the 20th century after this kind of their techniques were exported, particularly to the United States, how dominant it was. I went into some very, very deep research into the growth of the occult in Germany in the 19th century. Quite incredible, actually, how for about 60 or 70 years before Hitler was born, you had this longing in Germany for an Aryan Christ, the Freia Christus. And you had all these groups like the Orders of the Templars. You had people like Guido von List, who was writing these esoteric things about a new Messiah was coming from Germany. You had people like Richard Wagner writing operas about it. And it was almost like they created Adolf Hitler as this kind of like this manifestation of this cultural desire to produce an Aryan Christ who would save Jesus. And it happened, the pinpoint of it was a weekend that took place in Munich in 1919. When there was a Bolshevik revolution and there was a declaration of a Bavarian Soviet in the city, and these troops called Free Corps and something called the Tool Combat League were basically an esoteric paramilitary force operating out of the Four Seasons Hotel in Munich, basically created the 20th century in the world we lived in. It was the flashpoint between two fields, two theosophy and ariosophy, two fields of esoteric magic had met in a paramilitary sense. And I couldn't believe what I was reading, and I couldn't believe how this was so well documented and how this had never really been brought to the fore before in terms of its effect on the world. And it just became, and also while I was writing this book, I had some very strange, shall we say, paranormal events, particularly when I was working on some of the illustrations for the book that I talk about in the book. It was almost like I was invoking something very dark, but something very powerful. That's why I mentioned at the very beginning how black magic seems to get the results quicker than anything else. And it really does. It really does. And these people knew this in Germany in the turn of the last century. And just like they know it, they know it today. And that's why you have things like the Skull and Bones at Yale and the Bush family and all this stuff going on. These people know this stuff works. So anyway, I was just going to write a book about just the Nazi aspect of that and the growth of the sort of esoteric and the occult movements in Germany. and it's got so big, I'm going to have to write 3 books on it. So this is why this is called Valpurgis Night Volume 1. And it covers the period from 1919 to 1933. But I've written a book in the style of almost like a Tolkien saga, very much in that style. So I throw in not only what was going on, but also things to do with Teutonic occult, Nordic occult, and all these other and folklore, and all these other things that crystallized inside the Germanic psyche at the turn of the 20th century. It's fascinating stuff. It's a whole field of study that has blown my mind. It had me visiting SS bunkers in Norway. I interviewed an ex-Hitler youth, and it really has kind of taken over my life. It's a subject I've become quite passionate about.
Well, why was it so passionate? Where did the motivation come from, bro?
I think it answered a lot of questions for me. I couldn't understand evil. Now, you look at psychopathy and say, okay, they're psychopaths and they're evil bastards. But I had to understand, I had to understand. It wasn't politics alone doesn't cause people to do what they do. It doesn't cause tens of millions of Germans to lay down their lives on the Eastern Front in a suicidal war against the Soviet Union. That alone doesn't do it. You have to have something deeper than that. And you have to take those political actions and turn them into almost like supernatural beliefs, that you're not just fighting in a war, but you're part of a mystical destiny. You're like a modern knight. You're not just fighting for one political system or trying to create territory. And the Nazis did this so brilliantly. They took nationalism and turned it into an incredible religion. And while I was researching this stuff, what I was seeing was George Bush, Tony Blair, and the way they talk about building crusades in the Middle East. And it's basically black magic that hasn't ended. We are under a ferocious spell. And I never really realized, now we talk about the scumbaggery and how evil the elite are, but we never really think of just how bad it is. It's so bad, it's toxic. Now, one of the last times you interviewed me on this show, you had said, I'd admitted to you that I'd actually come to the conclusion that the psychopathic thing, there's a very deep spiritual element to it. I'm not sure what it is, but there's a spiritual aspect to it. I can honestly say now, I think there are forces behind the veil, behind our leaders, that are not human, and they're not. I'm not going to say they're reptilians or anything, demons. I don't know what they are, but I've now come to the conclusion that human beings, and this is a huge admission for me personally, that the dark black magic forces of this earth are actually they're not of this earth. These leaders, these psychopathic leaders, are wired into something that isn't human, or more likely they're infected. They're infected by some non-human consciousness that has them doing the things they are doing today. And, you know, like GMOs and Monsanto and poisoning us and killing us and just treating us the way they do, as if we're a separate species. Because I really do believe there's some truth to that. And the revelation for that, for me, was the transformation of the German people into what they became. You know, went from being a very sensible, sort of like conservative race to, you know, throwing down their lives on the Eastern Front because they believed that they were fighting subhumans and all this kind of thing. And they were on some kind of mystical quest to preserve Aryan blood, because when Aryan blood was pure, they would turn to a race of angelic beings. This is what they actually believed. This is what was going on with groups like the SS. And that to me was not the product of human minds. So this is why that became so powerful for me. It changed me as a person, because it finally took me out of my sort of conservative, you know, comfort zone regarding this issue, and transformed me to somewhere else. And I now believe that the demonic evil is a real force in this world, and it really is. That if we were to go behind the scumbaggery, behind the psychopaths in charge, behind it all, there's something there, and it's not human, and it's pulling the strings.
I actually tend to agree. On the same week that we had, I think it was you and Jay Widener and James Corbett on the same show doing a sort of a roundtable about psychopaths, a big discussion on it. What I also did during that week is I did two other roundtables with three other guests on two separate shows talking again about psychopaths, but they were talking about it from two completely different angles to the way our first interview with you, James, and Jay was. And the second show was about Jinn, D-J-I-N-N, yeah. from the ancient world, and basically these are spirits, you know, Aladdin's lamp and all of that kind of stuff, and they can possess you, they can grant you wishes and blah, blah, blah. And surprisingly, there's a lot of ancient evidence for the existence of these creatures and a lot of modern evidence to say that they're still around. And the other discussion was about what the... ancient Americans called Watiko, all right, or snake demons and things of that nature, which are, again, similar thing, like a parasite, they're capable of attaching to the lower cortex of the brainstem and more or less controlling it. And what the fields of research all seem to coincide with, both the modern psychopathy research, ancient jinn from the Middle East, and also Watiko and the snake demons and demon possession, Christianity, etc. What all of these three different fields of research totally agreed on was that it's a parasitical organism that needs a human body to possess. They can't survive on their own.
I'm down with all that. I know Paul Levy wrote the two books on Watiko. I've spoke to him. I agree with that. But I'm very much, very much caught up in the idea of the whole jinn thing now, especially as I have a Muslim friend who's been translating documents for me that aren't readily available in English, and the more I study the jinn thing, the more I say that's it, I can roll with this one. This seems to be the Muslim world, and it may even explain why there's so much hatred of the Muslim world among our psychopathic elite, because if you go to the Muslim world, they talk about jinn not as a supernatural thing, concept that might exist. To them, it's a reality. It actually exists. The jinn is the real, and they even go as far as thinking, saying things like that when rock, the Western records are taken into the headquarters of these record companies and mastered, they actually say the mastering process is putting the jinn on them to turn the record into a sort of a jinn-infused idea. And there's even, this even ties up with the Germanic thing as well, because the jinn infection seems to have spread into Europe when the Teutonic Knights invaded the Middle East about 900 years ago, and went to war in the Middle East to recapture the Holy Land as part of the Crusades, and involved themselves in some horrific battles with the Saracens and other Islamic warlords and tribes. I think the infection may have happened at that point. That's when the Teutonic Knights came back to Europe. Remember, they created Prussia, and before that, Charlemagne was a product of that, and he was a fanatical Christian knight. This is when the whole wiping out of indigenous Europeans, native archetypal and spiritual traditions started. I believe the infection came back with the Teutonic Knights and actually metastasized in the Prussian Empire among the aristocrats until the arrival of National Socialism. And also, a lot of that, this is why I'm thinking so deeply about these things now. The jinn idea is the one for me that seems to tick the boxes. And yes, this idea of the parasite and the infection, I really do believe it's real now. I really do, because if it takes over the leadership of society, this is why I see us as the kind of antibodies to this parasite infection.
Well, it's because we're far more difficult to infect. You need what was the requirements? I think you needed to have a lot of fear and anxiety in order to be open to possession in the first place, and you also need a direct, in some cases, prolonged contact with an infected person. So if you are best friends or married to a psychopath and they're traumatizing you and what have you, what is noticeable is that sometimes you will turn into one of them. And I've yet to see any studies, evidence, or attempts at being able to purge this infection from people outside of the things like exorcism, which seem to be effective in some cases. Other times, they just kill the host, just kind of like on Aliens. You know, if you want to get rid of the parasite off you, you have to kill the host taking it off.
Yeah, and that's another thing too. That's what I call the proto-psychopath. The person is not naturally a psychopath, but either through a horrific situation, a bad relationship, or just being caught in something that's genuinely, that's led by a psychopath, like a political organization or a cult. The infection spreads very, this is what my friend, the Muslim friend told me. He said that that's why cults end up like the way they do. Like you have Jonestown and you have like the Branch Davidians, these mass suicides in Heaven Gate. Because they're living together, they're so wired into each other, the psychopathic leader infects all the others with the jinn very, very quickly, to the point where it's literally a jinn-saturated environment. And basically the jinns want to escape then, and they kill everybody. They lead them towards a suicide pact and that kind of thing. Very, very interesting stuff. And it ties in with like Western philosophy. You listen to like what things like Nietzsche have said, that if you stare into hell long enough, hell will start staring back at you. It's that kind of thing. This is why I always say, if you know a psychopath, get the fuck away from them. Run and have no contact with them ever again. Because you're literally not only in danger of losing your sanity. I've now come to the point in this field of research, this journey I've been on, that you'd also be in danger of losing your soul.
Yeah, and there's no coming back from that. I mean, if you're infected by a djinn, there is no tonic you can take.
Yet.
The other element here that I want to kind of stress to people is precisely what you said, and just another reminder, because it bears repeating, if you know a psychopath, run! Don't walk! They're like the blob, and they will sucker you in and dissolve your soul. Run! Not kidding. They'll destroy your life.
Change your phone number, change your address, get away, and make sure they can't contact you ever again.
Yeah. And if psychopaths are contacting you on Facebook, the block function. Don't argue. Don't you know, try and involve yourself. Because they'll just accuse you of things that aren't true. And as every skeptic knows, the amount of energy it takes to come up with BS is a hell of a lot less than the amount of energy it has to prove that that BS is BS. All right?
Precisely.
So they will suck you dry, like a vampire. And you have to invite them. And you have to invite them in. Yeah.
Because it's that what they're doing is then they're like, it's like you're scratching a scab with dirty fingers. You're going to get infected. Stay away. Clean yourself. Clean yourself of the energy. Do not allow yourself to become infected.
Yeah, and in my case, the only person who, the only psychopath who I've ever made the mistake of going up against and trying to expose has been Pete Santilli, and I've suffered dearly as a result of that. And I must, it probably wasn't worth it. In retrospect, even though I may have saved hundreds, even thousands of people from listening to his broadcast and getting involved with him and certain movements and things like that, so he can derail them at the behest of the FBI masters who he works for, it hasn't been worth it. Honestly, I just wish I'd never done it, and I'd never been so stupid as to believe that my pride in doing the right thing was strong enough to oppose somebody who, for whom the rules, manners, and anything that resembles common decency didn't exist.
It's just how it is. I mean, I don't know what that full situation is, but I do know that a lot of people were hurt by it. And it's one of those things you wish never happened. I mean, I know you were changed by it. You were a different kind of person after what had happened. Because I saw you, your personality change a little bit. You became a lot. You lost a bit. You lost some of your confidence. But, I mean, I don't know. I've been there, Vinny. I've done things I wish I got involved with people that I try to take on. And I wish I didn't. Not because they're better or they're stronger. It was because they will go to depths and levels that a normal person would never go to. And they will.
Yeah. Like, let's say you and me started having a fight or something about something random, you know, and the worst you or I would do to each other was perhaps, I don't know, write an article exposing him and saying this guy behaves in a certain way and I didn't like it and this is who he is, fair warning, etc. Psychopath would go, I can make up a whole lot of stuff about him. I can accuse him of being a pedophile and get everybody to believe it. Yep. I can kidnap his kids, or I can send a bomb into his mailbox or something like that. These are things that you or I would never, it would never even occur to us, you know?
Yeah, if you and I had a big row, I wouldn't even do the article. I just wouldn't talk about you anymore. If you look at my website, there's absolutely nothing like that on it. I just don't get into those kinds of things. I don't confront. The hardest I will go is I'll tell someone to feck off, and that's the end of it. But it's like, you're right, they will sink to levels. That's why I always say, if you're under workplace at one and you're having a problem with, don't, under no circumstances, confront them, because they'll do things like put kiddie porn on your computer and work. They'll do that.
You can't predict them, and that's the thing. As Sun Tzu said, you know, if you don't understand your enemy, he's going to freaking destroy you. And believe me when I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, unless you're a psychopath, you don't understand them. That's why the only thing that they fear is either being exposed or worse, psychopaths.
Yeah, they have no decency breaks, and that's the big mistake that people make. That they think gentlemanly conduct will prevail in the end. Oh no, no, you have gone into a world that you're way out of your depth in. It doesn't matter. I mean, that's not an ego thing. I'm just saying that's what it is. Never, ever, ever, if people listen to this show, ever try to take on a psychopath. No contact ever again, and just get on with your life.
Yeah, that's the best you can do. If a psychopath is alone with nobody to torture or manipulate on a desert island, they will starve to death. Quite literally. They thrive on pain and conflict and suffering and evil. And if you reduce the amount that they have available to them, they wither and die. Quite literally.
Yeah, and give up your pride. Don't forget, my pride, I've got to stand up. Get all that shit out of your head. That doesn't exist in this world.
Yeah, I mean, so what if I made up the name Guerrilla Media and used it as a truth of web platform or stuff like that for 5 years before Pete Santilli even came on the scene and then saw the name and said, you know, Vinny, that's really great, and then buys up all the websites behind it with all the names Guerrilla Media and Guerrilla Media Network, and then he gets fired off American Freedom Radio for fighting with other hosts on the network, and then he starts up his own becomes a part of like the media contact person for the Truckers Ride for the Constitution, which had 200,000 likes on their page, hugest freaking Facebook page we've ever seen. And then after the Truckers Ride for the Constitution got derailed and virtually nobody turned up because Pete Santilli screwed them all over, he changed the name of that Facebook group to Guerrilla Media Network with 200,000 likes. And guess who can do anything to stop him? Nobody. Nobody.
Let it go. Let it go, Vinny. Don't, you know, get on with your life.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the story is. It doesn't matter what. I just like my attitude. Like right here in Ireland, there's a big fight going on between two sort of like truth groups. And I'm not getting involved. I'm not getting involved. I just don't do it. I just like, I'm friends with everyone and I'm nice to everyone. But if something is causing you that much pain, emotional pain, just walk away from it.
Well, see, what I've done is sort of like, first, I waltzed right into it, you know, headlong into it, did all these videos exposing them, articles and things like that. And those videos are now up to tens of thousands of hits, the articles up to tens of thousands of hits, and they're actually some of the most popular videos and keep getting more and more and more and more coverage day by day. And so, in so doing, just fighting back the once and not having to fight back again because the content's still up there, I've blocked. It took me 3.5 months to sufficiently block the trolls and Santilli's fake accounts. before they were unable to see my videos or see my Facebook posts. That's how many scum came after me as a result of the, of this big crap fight. And now the crap fight's over, but he's still getting exposed, and I don't have to do anything. And I think that's probably the only way you can ever be even mildly successful at doing this. And again, it's still not worth it.
No, it's nothing is worth it. Yeah. You know, my attitude to all these things that cause you this kind of stress is like, you just have to spite it and live your life and live the life. There is, you know, again, I mean, you said you regretted that you ever got involved in this. I mean, I respect you for saying that, because that's an important healing moment for you. You begin the healing when you admit I bit off something that couldn't chew. That's okay. That doesn't mean you're a failure. If anything, it means the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, all it did is teach me that doing the right thing against evil doesn't give you rewards. It gives you punishment, pain, and suffering, and that's it. Period. All right. You don't gain success. You don't gain knowledge that is valuable. All you do is realize that you shouldn't have done it. And that's about the best conclusion that you can make. Thomas Sheridan has been my very special guest, thomassheridanarts.com. And I would encourage you, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not much of a reader myself, but apparently his books are incredibly good. And if his speaking voice and his ability to appear on radio shows at 2 o'clock in the freaking morning, local Irish time, and speak with the cogent capacity that he does, those books must be like the bestsellers ever. And well worth the read. Thank you, Thomas, for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Vinny. It's been a pleasure as usual.
And if you want to see this show continue, ladies and gentlemen, I will remind you again, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and either through the PayPal or the Kiwi Bank, if you happen to be in New Zealand, sign up for a monthly gift of $5. All right, and just keep this little show on the road, so that we can keep exposing scumbaggery in perpetuity and help all the activists and people who are important thinkers of our time who aren't loading you down with mainstream media BS the coverage that they deserve. It's been another exciting episode. Thank you for your time, and we'll see you again.